Good morning to everyone. Our first case of the day is State v. Wenzel L. Ash. Mr. Tabor, good morning to you.
My name is Glenn Tabor. I'm court-appointed attorney for Mr. Ash, Judge Weimer. In 45 years, I'm not sure I've ever seen a more bizarre, convoluted criminal case ever. You've already heard this once, I know, and you're probably very familiar with it, 2013. I'm only going to talk about two things today, basically insufficiency of the evidence and ineffective assistance of counsel. I know that you've already, in your first opinion, found there was sufficient evidence to support the verdict. However, I'm asking you to look at that again. There's some of the same evidence, but some is a little bit different. And I think the court should look at that. As far as insufficiency of the evidence, there's so many prior inconsistent statements from everybody involved here. It's just truly amazing. Investigator Eads found two 22 caliber shell casings, which corroborated defendant's earliest interview. And there's testimony that those could not have been fired from a 38 caliber weapon, which was the murder gun. They never did find any 38 caliber bullets out there. They found every other conceivable metal object in that area. So it's very curious to me why they didn't find the 38 shell casings. Detective Maul did find a rifle or shotgun stock in the scene's trailer where he was sharing which he was sharing with Mr. Ash and Kelly Ian Ash. And the decedent's father testified that he did give a 22 caliber rifle to Ryan at one time. Had gone to the trailer to visit, never saw it, or did see it, excuse me, and didn't know, you know, how what happened to it, how it disappeared. Then you got missing black gloves. Kelly, me, and Ash had so many inconsistent statements. One of the statements, she said, well, that was the first time I was using meth, which is a ridiculous statement. Inconsistent statements of where the gun was found, the transfer of the gun, who had it, when she had it, when she took it, so on and so forth. The defendant originally told the investigators that it was a self-defense, that he did kill Gittren. Later, he said Gittren was going to kill Kelly with a rifle, which he'd been using to hunt rabbits out of the farmstead where the body was found. And Gittren threatened to kill Kelly, so Mr. Ash took the rifle away and he got shot twice. Now, when he found out that his wife was going to flip on him and testify for the state, all of a sudden, he said, oh, now, wait a minute. I didn't do it, she did it. I've been, you know, covering up to protect her. And now I'm not going to because she's flipping on me. Of course, that was the reason that this honorable court reversed the case the first time, because continuance by the defense was not granted by the judge. That was one of the two reasons. During the trial, Seaton's girlfriend testified that my boyfriend was a coke user and a meth user, and when he was using, his behavior changed dramatically, which to me kind of corroborates Mr. Ash's interview that Mr. Gittren went crazy and he was going to kill Kelly because he burnt the dope. Meth pipe. Very upset, and that's when this incident happened. Mr. Ash, during the sentencing trial, brought an allegation that the ATF had tortured him to make these incriminating statements. I think that should have been investigated at that time. Those are pretty serious allegations, but nothing was ever done. As far as ineffective assistance of counsel, which this case is probably headed towards, in my estimation, I think there were a number of things that counsel did not do and perhaps should have done. I know it's hard to second-guess trial counsel, but he never moved for a directed verdict, either at the close of the state's case or at the close of his case. He had several stipulations, which, as I said in my brief, it just made it a lot easier for the state to try their case. And I don't know why he's being so amenable. He didn't need to do that. Dr. Schilke has some hearsay statements about Dr. Combs that were not objected to. Trial counsel supposedly had a DNA analysis showing the barrel of the murder weapon had female DNA on it. That was never brought up. So that might make a difference or not, I don't know. It's hard to go back in time and second guess, but that may have caused some reasonable doubt in the jury's mind. Defense interviews were played to the jury through, and there's no objection by trial counsel on that. I think that was perhaps a mistake. Keila Rios was a witness, never testified, but she had personal knowledge contradicting Kelly Ash's testimony. This is one of the reasons for the original motion to continue, which the judge denied. His trial counsel said at that time, I need her deposition. I may subpoena her and testify. I don't know. I need to take her deposition. I don't have time to do it. And I need time to get an expert on drug-induced psychosis referring to Kelly Ash. The judge said no, and I think on page 8 of your opinion, you said the Keila Rios might have undermined the credibility of Kelly Ash about motive and hallucinations, or alleged hallucinations of her, could be material and necessary in preparing a defense. That's why you reversed it the first time around. Okay, that never happened. Rios was never talked to. There's no expert ever found. Again, whether that would make a difference, I don't know.
How did you read our prior opinion with respect to Ms. Ashmian's mental health, that a continuance might have permitted an investigation of it, or
yes.
was the continuance an opportunity to depose her?
Well,
or all the above, or more?
I believe trial counsel had three main things. One, they just found out that Kelly had flipped. Number two, he wanted to take a deposition of, or at least talk to this Keila Rios, had personal knowledge contradicting Kelly Ash. Three, he wanted time to find an expert on drug-induced hallucinations, hopefully undermine her credibility. And the judge said no. That was the reason.
And those are the things that could have been done with a continuance.
Yes.
And then they were not done.
They were never done.
Thank you.
And supposedly, defense counsel had a psychiatric evaluation of Kelly Ash, and that was never introduced. That made a difference? I don't know. It's hard to predict. Trial counsel never filed a motion to suppress. You know, and you always file a motion to suppress, in my experience, see what the court does. Supposedly, according to the defendant, the trial counsel had a letter from Kelly Ash saying that she was the murderer. And that letter disappeared. What happened to it? I don't know. Shortly before trial, trial counsel in the files of the first trial found the name of Todd Rowell, who supposedly could have corroborated defendant's testimony. And instead of asking for a continuance, he just disregarded that and didn't bother. And that person should have been identified a lot earlier than that, shortly before trial, I think a few days, and talked to or deposed and or subpoenaed to testify. No, that was never done. Then Mr. Ash said, well, the murder never happened. Here it was in Colorado. So another...
When did he bring that up?
Well, that sentence. That was never investigated, I think, properly. It may have should have been if defense counsel actually knew about it. Supposedly he did. Again, I know it's hard to second-guess trial counsel, but I think there's a lot of things that could have been done, should have been done, and were not. But the as far as the testimony of Kelly Ash, I mean, this young lady is just, she's a basket case. Ridiculous. Five times, different statements, depositions, testimony. She said, yeah, there's one gunshot. And I saw Ryan, he was bleeding from the left side of his neck. Well, he was shot on the right side, number one. Shot twice, there's no question about that. But she was emphatic. He was only one shot, one shot, one shot. Obviously, that's wrong.
Well, these are all credibility issues that the jury decided against Mr. Ash, isn't that correct?
Correct.
So it's a pretty high burden. Are we supposed to defer to the jury?
Well, you are, but again, I think that this court can review the insufficiency of the evidence again. I'm asking you to. Kelly, was in foster home. She was a runaway. She had two prior felony convictions. She was a meth user. They're all using meth when this happened, evidently. It calls into question everybody's testimony. She used other drugs, hard drugs, marijuana. She had hallucinations, saw spiders and worms crawling out of her skin, and crazy stuff. She admitted to law enforcement she lied to them, which tells me right there that she's not credible.
How much of this information with respect to her mental health or credibility issues was before the jury?
Well, not a whole lot. Evidently, she had been treated at three different places.
Was that before the jury?
I don't believe it ever was. And, she has a mental problem. I don't think there's any question about that. And then she told four people, including investigators, she'd been raped repeatedly by Brian Gittron, repeatedly. And later she said, actually, it wasn't really a rape. One time when he touched me inappropriately. Well, I mean, that's just ludicrous. But she told everybody she'd been sexually molested, raped by him. And it was just simply, not true. So basically that's the crux of my argument on those two issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee in the state of Nebraska. Ash raised four assignments of error in his brief, sufficiency of the evidence, evidentiary rulings that occurred at trial, his motion for new trial, and ineffective assistance of trial counsel. I'm going to be fairly brief. His sufficiency claim fails because it's merely asking this court to reweigh the evidence and to assess the credibility of the witnesses. This court cannot do. The evidence in this case was near identical to the first one, the first trial, and this court already found that that evidence was sufficient and allowed it to go for retrial. For his second assignment of error on the trial court's evidentiary rulings, I want to preface my argument by saying that he cites in brief to seven portions of the record without ever really arguing why what happened at trial was an error. I don't think that's good enough under this court's precedent that he must both assign and argue his errors in brief. Nonetheless, I'd be happy to answer any questions that this court may have about any of those seven sections of the record.
Well, did that encompass some drawing our attention to some 404 evidence?
Yes.
How do you understand the claim at this appellate level?
Well, that's one of the ones he made absolutely no argument on, first of all. But second of all, the this court's first opinion about the jacket, this court intimated in Ash 1 that the jacket would be admissible under 404 for motive. The state did that on retrial. It came in for motive. He also argues that the television came in inadmissibly, should have been 404, should have gotten limiting instruction. The television was just one of many of the victim's possessions, including the victim's car that Ash was in possession of after the murder. I really don't see any error with regard to television in that regard.
Are you saying there's no error because a limiting instruction was given, or because if it wasn't given, it was harmless error?
The latter.
Okay.
I pitched an argument that I think the television is inextricably intertwined, too. I mean, he goes immediately after the murder to Detron's trailer, loads up all of his possessions, and that is showing consciousness of guilt. I don't think you go to somebody's home, load up all of their possessions, unless you know they're not coming back, and he knows he's not coming back because he killed him.
Does it also go to motive?
I guess it could, but the state doesn't have to prove motive.
The jacket was before the date on which murder was alleged to have been committed, is that right?
That's right.
And the TV and stuff was after, is that
right? Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Ash's motion for new trial claim fails because it was based upon the insufficiency of the evidence, namely that the murder occurred in Colorado and not Nebraska. Well, certainly that's something that Ash would have known if it was in fact true before the first trial ever even started. In fact, the evidence at trial was that Ash admitted it occurred in Kimball County, Nebraska, when he led the officers there and showed him exactly where Detron was shot. Ash raises or attempts to raise 14 claims of ineffective assistance of trial counsel. The state submits that half are without merit. I think the record is sufficient to show that. Then the other half either can't be addressed because his allegations on deficient performance are insufficient, or the record's insufficient to address them. Mr. Tabor talked about a number of them today. I won't go into the specifics of any of them, again, unless this court has any questions about any of those 14. If the court has no further questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
We have
7 minutes and 58 seconds. Mr. Tabor?
I don't really have any more argument, Your Honor, other than this is my brief. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for serving. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is In Re Conservatorship of Frankie.